ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free.
The Herald of Truth broadcast is on the air, a program of spirit and truth dedicated to teaching the way of God more perfectly. These broadcasts contain keys to help unlock knowledge and reveal hidden truths of the Bible in these last days. Christians called to a higher level of understanding will be given Bible-based solutions to their personal as well as national problems. They will want to find out more about their part in God's plan. Our mailing address is Kingdom Identity Ministries, Post Office Box 1021, Harrison, Arkansas, 72602, and will be given again at the end of this broadcast.
I thought tonight we might change the routine a little bit by going back over something that probably you haven't heard for quite a while. We speak often of the covenant that God has made with our people, and yet the details of whom probably we've largely forgotten. So tonight I thought we might review these from the beginning. We'll see there have been a number of them, and they have been very much for our good. It started way back in Eden, and we lived up to our usual custom by breaking it real early. Back in the first chapter of Genesis, verses 28 to 30, God said, "Be fruitful and multiply and replenish the earth and subdue it and have dominion over the fish of the sea and over the fowl of the air and over every living thing that moveth upon the earth." And God said, "Behold, I have given you every herb bearing seed which is upon the face of the earth, and every tree in which is the fruit of the tree yielding seed. To you it shall be for meat, and to every beast of the earth, and to every fowl of the air, and to everything that creepeth upon the earth, wherein there is life, I have given every green herb for meat." And so it was. Now, along with the benefits given, God always gives some rules for our guidance. Never arbitrary. Always rules which, if we follow them, will lead us to better things in every way. Genesis 2, verses 16 and 17. "And the Lord God commanded the man, saying, Of every tree of the garden thou mayest eat, but of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil thou shalt not eat of it, for in the day that thou eatest thereof thou shalt surely die." It's unfortunate that our major churches are willing to preach anything except truth. They have taken up the ancient Arab legend that this forbidden tree was the apple tree, and that in the absolutely arbitrary and unreasonable manner, God selected that as the thing to forbid, and that Adam took a bite out of the apple, and that is the cause of all the trouble. Now, that isn't the case, and if they had bothered trying to get a good translation of the Bible, they couldn't have made that mistake. In the third chapter of Genesis, starting out in verse 1, as I remember it, Satan says to Eve, "Why, is it true that God has said you can't eat of any tree in the garden?" And she says, "Oh no, we can eat the fruit of all the trees in the garden, except of the tree which stands in the midst of the garden, God has said, of the fruit thereof thou shalt not eat, neither shalt thou touch it, lest ye die." I'm quoting the way it is in the King James Version. So you can see pretty well what the understanding was. Now, the word mistranslated fruit is the Hebrew word kirkos, and it means children or grandchildren, progeny, descendants. Now, do you go to the market and tell the clerk that you want 2 pounds of the descendants of an apple tree? That isn't the language you use, and it wasn't then. then neither shall ye touch it, lest ye die. The word mistranslated touch is the Hebrew word naga. It is a euphemism, a more polite expression, meaning to have sexual intercourse with. Do you have to be warned not to go to bed with an apple? So, it is very evident that the forbidden thing was race mixing. Remember that the Bible nowhere says that Adam was the first human being on earth. The Bible recognizes in many places the existence of pre-Adamic races. Now, if all God wanted was somebody wide between the shoulders and narrow between the eyes, and stayed up the garden in Eden, he had millions of Asiatics and Negroes to do that. He didn't need to create an entirely new kind of being on the earth. But it was quite evident that none of them had what it took to do the job that God had in mind. If you're going out quail hunting and you want a dog to point and retrieve quail, you may like your Pekingese lap dog quite well, but you don't take him hunting with you. He's not qualified for that job. We know, of course, that our ancestors started out in the fashion we have followed, violating instructions. Always our people have felt that we know better than God because our intentions are so good. And always they learn the hard way that God knows better than we do. Again, this word mistranslated serpent in the Bible properly has no such meaning. The Hebrew word nakash means enchanter or magician. And Satan, while thrown out of heaven, still had a great many of his angelic powers left, and undoubtedly he could qualify as an enchanter or magician to quite an extent. So it wasn't any scaly snake wriggling along the ground that gave Eve poor advice. But now in Genesis 3, verses 14 and 15, we get some more of that covenant. And we haven't had brains enough to follow this one either. We're letting ourselves be talked out of it now. And the Lord God said unto the enchanter, because thou hast done this, thou art cursed above all cattle and above every beast of the field. Upon thy belly shalt thou go, and dust shalt thou eat all the days of thy life. Well, you know, even today, having to crawl on your belly is an expression for extreme humiliation. And as for eating dust, we know, of course, that no actual snake does so. But again, it's an expression for humiliation. And then God goes on and says, and this is what we are tending to forget, and I, that's God speaking, and I will put enmity between thee, Satan, and the woman, and between thy seed and her seed. So the enmity that there should be between our people and the children of Satan, and I do mean children, is one put there by God himself, and we ignore it at our peril. You see, God speaking to Satan talks about enmity between thy seed and her seed. Now the same Hebrew word, zera, literally meaning seed, but commonly used to cover descendants of people, the same word is used both as the Satan's seed and the seed of Eve. So you can see that Satan was to have just as literal children as with Eve. Well, things rocked along for a while on that basis. And you finally reach the point where, ignoring the command that God had put the enmity there, our people allowed Satan's seed to come in and corrupt our people. Until finally it was necessary to cleanse the part of the world they occupied. So you have the matter of the second covenant, the covenant with Noah. You find that in the sixth of the ninth chapters of Genesis, and I'll condense it here. And God said to Noah, "The end of all flesh has come before me, for the earth is filled with violence, and behold, I will destroy them with the earth." Now, there again, you have a bit of mistranslation. It is not speaking of the entire globe of the earth. The Hebrew word used was eretz, and it means that life, a particular place that was to be destroyed by flood. Egyptian written history comes down without any interruption from before the flood right through it and after it. Chinese written history comes down through the same period with no interruption. And while we don't have as complete a record of the history of the Babylonian region, the Tigris-Euphrates Valley, yet still we know that the cities of Sumer, the lower Tigris-Euphrates Valley, they also came through it without a break. Local floods like you have in our Mississippi Valley today, yes, but no general flood. So God goes on, and behold, I, even I, do bring a flood of waters upon the, and I'm going to correct it here and read it as was in the Hebrew, a flood of waters upon the land to destroy all flesh wherein is the breath of life from under heaven. And everything that is in that land shall die. But with thee will I establish my covenant, and thou and thy sons and thy wife and thy sons' wives with thee. And Yahweh said unto Noah, "Come thou and all thy house into the ark, for thee have I seen righteous before me in this generation." And God spake unto Noah, saying, "Go forth out of the ark, thou and thy wife, and thy sons, and thy sons' wives with them." He guided him when to go into the ark and when to leave it. Now, after the flood was over and Noah and his sons were starting out again, up in the eighth chapter of Genesis, and Yahweh said in his heart, "I will not again curse the ground for man's sake, for the imagination of man's heart is evil from his youth. Neither will I again smite any more everything living as I have done. While the earth remaineth, seed time and harvest, and cold and heat, and summer and winter, and day and night shall not cease." Now, you occasionally hear somebody who has read some mistaken letters here saying that one of the things going to happen is that the tilt of the earth's axis is going to be straightened up as part of the matter of getting the earth ready for the new age. Well, of course, scientifically, it's absurd. The thing that makes the earth inhabitable is that tilt. If the earth's axis were straightened up at right angles to the plane in which the earth orbits around the sun, you would have a broad band of the tropics that would be absolutely uninhabitable because of the excessive heat. You would have a large area at both poles that would be as completely uninhabitable as the Antarctic continent is today. And you would have only a very narrow belt in the northern and in the southern temperate region, which would be habitable at all. In other words, you would come out with probably only 10% as much habitable earth as you now have, which would hardly be an improvement for anybody. Now, the tilt of the earth's axis is what gives us the four seasons. And you notice here God's specific promise that while the earth remains, seed time and harvest, cold and heat, summer and winter, shall not cease. And again, as to the people who are afraid that our high-flying jet planes are going to bring on us a new ice age, remember the promise here is that cold and heat, summer and winter, are going to be with us permanently. So there are some things that you don't need to fear. Now you remember that way back in the Garden of Eden, the command was given to take over the earth, to do it, and rule it. That's what Adam was put here for. Not to become a slave, to earn money, to be given to our enemies on the ground that they don't work as hard as we do and don't have as much as we do. We were put here to take over and run it, and teach them how to earn their own way in their own country. Now in Genesis 9, God takes this up again. And God blessed Noah and his sons, and said to them, be fruitful and multiply and replenish the earth. And the fear of you and the dread of you shall be upon every beast of the earth and upon every fowl of the air and upon all that moves upon the earth and upon all the fishes of the sea. Into your hand are they delivered. Every moving thing that lives shall be meat for you, even as the green herd have I given you all things. But flesh, with the life thereof, which is the blood thereof, shall ye not eat. And surely your blood of your lives will I require. At the hand of every beast will I require it, and at the hand of man. Now, our people haven't lived to any noticeable extent in any place where there are monkeys that have hands. So this fact that God would require at the hand of every beast that they answer for any of our people they have killed, you can see what kind of beast he's talking about. At the hand of every man's brother will I require the life of man. Whoso sheddeth man's blood, by man shall his blood be shed. And yet you hear some ministers of allegedly Christian churches talking against capital punishment. It is not simply permitted, it is explicitly commanded in the Bible. Whoso sheddeth man's blood, by man shall his blood be shed. For in the image of God made he man. And you, be fruitful and multiply, bring forth abundantly in the earth and multiply therein. And God spoke unto Noah and to his sons with him, saying, and behold, I establish my covenant with you, and with your seed after you, and with every living creature that is with you, of the fowl, of the cattle, and of every beast of the earth with you, from all that go out of the ark to every beast of the earth. And I will establish my covenant with you, neither shall all flesh be cut off any more by the waters of the flood. Neither shall there any more be a flood to destroy the earth. And God said, this is the token of the covenant I have made between me and you and every living creature that is with you for perpetual generations. I do set my bow in the cloud, and it shall be for the token of a covenant between me and the earth. And it shall come to pass when I bring a cloud over the earth that the bow shall be seen in the cloud. And I will remember my covenant, which is between me and you and every living creature of all flesh. And the waters shall no more become a flood to destroy all flesh. And the bow shall be in the cloud, and I will look upon it, that I may remember the everlasting covenant between God and every living creature of all flesh that is upon the earth. And God said unto Noah, this is the token of the covenant, which I have established between me and all flesh that is upon the earth. There is a prophetic addition to that covenant to Noah that sometimes overlooked. We've overlooked it today and are paying the penalty for it. And that's Genesis 9, verses 25 to 27, where Noah himself with the prophet who spoke this. Speaking of Canaan, cursed be Canaan. A servant of servants shall he be unto his brethren. And he said, Blessed be Yahweh, God of Shem, and Canaan shall be his servant. God shall enlarge Jacob, and he shall dwell in the tents of Shem, and Canaan shall be his servant. So you have a curse pronounced upon the Canaanites. And you remember that when our people were on the march from the Exodus, before they were allowed to enter the Promised Land, they were given specific instructions about these Canaanite people. The Jebusites, the Hivites, the Perizzites, the Hittites, and the rest of them living in the land of Canaan. God said, you must absolutely exterminate them. Don't leave one man, woman, or child alive. Because if you do, you're going to have integration. Your children will grow up with their children. They will intermarry. And thereby your descendants will become as corrupt as these Canaanites until I have to destroy them for the same reason that I'm telling you to destroy these Canaanites. And always we like to look down our nose at God and say how much more kind-hearted we are. We're never willing to cut out the cancer. We'd rather leave it there and preach at it in the hope we might convert it. So the Bible in the book of Judges gives the dismal record of the various Canaanite cities that our people conquered. And instead of exterminating them, we simply made them pay a tribute tax and left them there. And of course, they were the corrupting influence that brought our people into so much trouble later. And their descendants, of course, are today the people who are ruling the nation in Washington. Every time we failed and lost the benefits of one of these covenants, God made another one to bring us out of the disaster we've gotten into. The next is the covenant God made with Abraham. And that begins in Genesis chapter 12. Now Yahweh had said unto Abraham, Get thee out of thy country, and from thy kindred, and from thy father's house, unto a land that I will show thee, and I will make of thee a great nation, and I will bless thee, and make thy name great, and thou shalt be a blessing. And I will bless them that bless thee, and curse them that curseth thee. And in thee shall all the families of the earth be blessed. Later on in the same chapter, Abraham by this time had gotten into faith land, and Yahweh appeared to Abraham and said, Unto thy seed, will I give this land? And Yahweh said unto Abram, after that Lot was separated from him, Lift up now thine eyes, and look from the place where thou art, northward and southward and eastward and westward, for all the land which thou seest, to thee will I give it unto thy seed forever, and I will make thy seed as the dust of the earth, so that if a man can number the dust of the earth, then shall thy seed also be numbered. Arise, walk through the land, and the length of it, and the breadth of it, for I will give it unto thee. Going on into the 15th chapter of Genesis, God said this, Fear not, Abram, I am thy shield, thy reward is exceeding great. Look now toward heaven, and count the stars, if thou be able to number them. And he said unto him, So shall thy seed be. And Abram believed in Yahweh, and he reckoned it to him for righteousness. And he said unto him, I am Yahweh, that brought thee out of Ur of the Chaldees. To thee I give this land to possess it. Know of a surety that thy seed shall be a stranger in a land not theirs, and shall serve them, and they shall afflict them. 400 years, and that nation whom they have served I will judge, and afterward they shall come out with great substance. and thou shalt go to thy fathers in peace. Thou shalt be buried in a good old age. But in the fourth generation, they shall turn back hither, for the iniquity of the Amorites is not yet full. Now the Amorites were among these Canaanite people living in the land of Canaan at that time. Now God had evidently given them a warning to straighten up, and he'd allotted them a probationary time in which to do so. And that time had not yet expired. So God told Abram, your descendants will take over, but not until the time I have allotted to the Amorites has expired. But in the fourth generation they shall turn back hither, for the iniquity of the Amorites is not yet full. And in the same day Yahweh made a covenant with Abram, saying, unto thy seed have I given this land, from the river of Egypt unto the great river, the river Euphrates, and the Kenites, and the Kenizzites, and the Kadmonites, and the Hittites, and the Perizzites, and the Rephaim, and the Amorites, and the Canaanites, and the Girgashites, and the Jebusites. Those were the people they were to exterminate, so they could take over and a pure race dwell in that land. Then in the 17th chapter of Genesis, and when Abram was 90 years old and nine, Yahweh appeared to Abram and said unto him, I am the Almighty God. Walk before me, and be thou sincere, and I will make my covenant between me and thee, and will multiply thee exceedingly. As for me, behold, my covenant is with thee, and thou shalt be a father of many nations, and thou shalt be no more called Abram. Abram in Hebrew means high father, but thy name shall be Abraham, which means father of nations. For a father of many nations have I made thee, and I will make thee exceedingly fruitful, and I will make nations of thee, and kings shall come of thee. And I have established my covenant between me and thee and thy seed after thee to their generations, for a covenant age long, to be a God unto thee and to thy seed after thee. And I will give unto thee and to thy seed after thee the land wherein thou art a stranger, all the land of Canaan, for a possession age long, and I will be their God. And God said unto Abram, thou shalt keep my covenant, therefore, thou and thy seed after thee in their generations. This is my covenant which ye shall keep between me and you and thy seed after thee. Every man child among you shall be circumcised, and the uncircumcised man child, whose flesh of his foreskin is not circumcised, that soul shall be cut off from his people. He hath broken my covenant. Now you remember, in the fourth chapter of the book of Exodus, after Moses had been instructed by God to go back to Egypt and lead his people out, Moses started to go, and it says that God opposed him, stood in the path, and almost killed him, because Moses had not circumcised his children. In other words, if you are going to call upon God to keep his covenant, it's up to you to keep your part of it too. And God said unto Abram, as for Sarai, thy wife, thou shalt not call her name Sarai, but Sarah shall her name be. Sarai means bitterness in Hebrew. Sarah means princess. And I will bless her, and give thee a son also of her. Yea, I will bless her, and she shall be a mother of nations. Kings of people shall be of her. And God said, Sarah thy wife shall bear thee a son indeed, and thou shalt call his name Isaac. And I will establish my covenant with him for a covenant age long, and with his seed after him. as for Ishmael, that was Abram's son by the Egyptian concubine, as for Ishmael, I have heard thee. Behold, I have blessed him, and will make him fruitful, and will multiply him exceedingly. 12 princes shall he beget, and I will make him a great nation. But my covenant will I establish with Isaac, which Sarah shall bear unto thee at this appointed time in the next year. And in the 18th chapter of Genesis, we read this. And Yahweh said, shall I hide from Abraham that thing which I do, seeing that Abraham shall surely become a great and mighty nation, and all the nations of the earth shall be blessed in him? For I know him, that he will command his children and his household after him, and they will keep the way of Yahweh to do justice and judgment, that Yahweh may bring upon Abraham that which he hath spoken of him. And in the 22nd chapter of Genesis, God was certainly leaving no doubt about all he was going to do for the true Israel. By myself have I sworn, says Yahweh, for because thou hast done this thing, better go back and start over on that so we know what we're talking about. God had promised these great things to Abraham and said, all this is going to be in the destiny of your descendants through your son Isaac. And then when Isaac was a boy of about 12 years of age, God gave a strange command to Abraham. He said, I want you to take your son Isaac and go to a place that I will show you, and offer him up as a burnt offering sacrifice. Well, we know that in that period, among some of the people of that neighborhood, human sacrifice was not unknown. Now consider the frame of mind that Abraham must have been in. God had made these promises, and note that practically all of this was unconditional. Unlike the law which was given under Moses, where God said, if you do this, you will prosper, and if you don't, you'll be punished. God didn't make any if about this. He said, I will do this. The descendants of Abraham are going to become a great and mighty nation, and their character, their prosperity, will be a blessing to all the world. All this to be through the descendants of Isaac. And then when he's a boy of 12 years old, many years too young to have any descendants, God says, now take him and offer him up as a burnt offering. Well, you read in the Bible that Abraham went right ahead, not showing the awful grief of a father about to cause the death of his son. So you know what Abraham's frame of mind was. He said, I have these promises from God, these covenants. A covenant is an especially solemn contract. God has said the descendants of my son Isaac are going to do all this, which means that unless God intervenes ahead of time and prevents the sacrifice, that if I go ahead with the sacrifice, he will give me back my son. God will resurrect him. Complete faith in the promises of God. So, you know what happened. They got there, built stone altars, laid the wood on it for a fire, and started the fire. And then, before the sacrifice could go ahead, God told him, I was just testing your faith. Don't harm the boy. Caught in the bushes over here is a goat. Offer him as the sacrifice. So now after that, we come to this in the 22nd chapter of Genesis. "I myself have I sworn," says Yahweh, "because thou hast done this thing, and hast not withheld thy son, thine only son, that in blessing I will bless thee, and multiplying I will multiply thy seed as the stars of heaven and as the sand which is upon the seashore. And thy seed shall possess the gate of his enemies, and in thy seed shall all the nations of the earth be blessed, because thou hast obeyed my voice." Well, we've often discussed how history from that time on down to this has shown that these things have come to pass, that the people of the true Israel, not a Jew among them, the people of the true Israel have actually carried out everything that God had said Israel would do. The people of the nations of Western Europe and their colonies throughout the world. Well, Isaac grew to manhood, and God again repeated his covenant to Isaac, Genesis chapter 26. God said, "Sojourn in this land, and I will be with thee and will bless thee. For unto thee and unto thy seed I will give all these countries, and I will perform the oath which I swore unto Abraham my father, and I will make thy seed to multiply as the stars of heaven, and will give unto thy seed all these countries, and in thy seed shall all the nations of the earth be blessed, because if Abraham obeyed my voice, and kept my charge, my commandments, my statutes, and my laws." In the 26th chapter of Genesis, we come to mourn. "And Yahweh appeared unto him the same night and said, I am the God of Abraham thy father. Fear not, for I am with thee and will bless thee and multiply thy seed for my servant Abraham's sake." Now when his descendant Jacob, whose name God himself changed to Israel, when he was about to take over, Isaac gave him this prophetic blessing: "God give thee of the dew of heaven, and the fatness of the earth, and plenty of corn and wine. Let people serve thee, and nations bow down to thee. Be lord over thy brethren, and let thy mother's sons bow down to thee. Cursed be everyone that curseth thee, and blessed be he that blesseth thee." Then finally, to the patriarch Israel himself, God again repeated these, Genesis 28 and Genesis 35. "And behold, Yahweh stood above it and said, I am Yahweh, God of Abraham my father, and the God of Isaac. The land whereon thou liest, to thee will I give it and to thy seed, and thy seed shall be as the dust of the earth, and thou shalt spread abroad to the west and to the east, and to the north and to the south. And in thee and in thy seed shall all the families of the earth be blessed. And behold, I am with thee and will keep thee in all places whither thou goest. And I will bring thee again into this land, for I will not leave thee until I have done that which I have spoken to thee of. And God appeared unto Jacob again when he came out of Padan Aram, and blessed him. And God said unto him, I am God Almighty, be fruitful and multiply. A nation and a company of nations shall be of thee, and kings shall come out of thy loins. And the land which I gave Abraham and Isaac, to thee will I give it, and to thy seed after thee will I give the land." Now you will notice that up to this point we haven't come to any gift. We do have the one insistence that the token of acceptance of this covenant be complied with, but nevertheless, While God has said, that individual who breaks my covenant will be cut off. God never said, because of that, I will fail to do for the nation as a whole what I have promised. All these covenants, which are racial and national, are absolute. Any individual can lose the benefit of them by defying God, but he's going to make good to the people as a whole. Then you come, in the book of Exodus, to the law. And here's the first time where an if comes into it. Because now you are being promised different things. You're being promised that the blessings that will ultimately come will come the easy way if you obey his law, but you're going to get them the hard way indeed if you choose to violate it. Exodus 19, verses 5 to 8. Now therefore, if, that's the big if, now therefore, if you will obey my voice indeed and keep my covenant, then you shall be a peculiar treasure unto me above all people, for all the earth is mine. Does that sound like the current United Nations drive to reduce us to the level of the lowest savages? Not a bit of it. And ye shall be unto me a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. These are the words which thou shalt speak unto the children of Israel. And Moses came and called to the elders of the people, and laid before their faces all these words which Yahweh commanded him. And all the people answered together and said, all that Yahweh hath spoken, we will do. Now remember, there's that if. And when we went into this cursed satanic thing, the United Nations, in direct defiance of God, we brought upon ourselves the troubles that are now threatening us with total destruction. Leviticus 26, verses 3 to 8. If ye walk in my statutes and keep my commandments and do them, then will I give you rain in due season, and the land shall yield her increase, and the trees of the field shall yield their fruit. And your threshing shall reach unto the vintage, and the vintage shall reach unto the sowing time, and ye shall eat your bread to the full, and dwell in your land safely. Remember the dust bowl conditions we had in the Middle States during the early 30s? We chose to defy God, and therefore we didn't get the blessing. And I will give peace in the land, and you shall lie down, and none shall make you afraid. And I will rid evil beasts out of the land, neither shall the sword go through your land. And you shall chase your enemies, and they shall fall before you by the sword. And five of you shall chase 100. And 100 of you shall put 10,000 to flight, and your enemies shall fall before you by the sword. So what do we do? In the dirtiest betrayal since Judas Iscariot, we send our armies over to Asia under instructions to get killed, but don't you dare win that war no matter what happens. Unspeakably vile. When we put a man in uniform, give him a gun, and say, now go out and get shot for the enemy, we owe that man the absolute, unconditional duty to back him up with everything in our power, to bring quick victory that'll let him get home safe. And what have we done? We've let our politicians corruptly sell him out for the votes of a traitorous minority. So, it goes on the list, penalties for violation of the law. Individually, we will have poor health because we violate the dietary and hygienic laws. We will have trouble with our crops because we violate the agricultural laws. And in spite of all the wealth that God showers upon us, we will have a vast amount of poverty in the land, because that wealth is concentrated in the hands of the children of Satan, because we violate the economic laws of the Bible. And if we don't learn by that, we would even be taken into captivity. And you remember, it did happen to our ancestors. And yet in Leviticus 26, God goes on to say this: "And yet for all that, when they be in the land of their enemies, I will not cast them away, neither will I abhor them to destroy them utterly and break my covenant with them. For I am Yahweh their God. But I will, for their sake, remember the covenant of their ancestors, whom I brought out of Egypt in the sight of the heathen, that I might be their God. I am Yahweh." Well, that went on to the time of Jesus Christ. And then there came a new covenant. Now, among the 27,000 odd errors of translation in your King James Version of the Bible is the one of the translators speaking of the Old Testament and the New Testament. The words in either the Hebrew or the Greek will not bear that meaning. You have the Old Covenant, the contract. And God said he would make a new covenant. Now, in translating into the Latin, the Vulgate, Jerome made the error of translating that with the Latin word testamentum, which means, of course, the will by which a dying person disposes of his property after his death. And we have continued to use that stupid error in spite of the fact that it was so obviously wrong. But what is this new covenant? Well, like everything else in the so-called New Testament, it has its roots in the Old Testament. In Jeremiah chapter 31, beginning verse 31, you get the clear promise of it. "Behold, the day is come, saith the Lord, that I will make a new covenant." Note that, a contract, a promise. "I will make a new covenant with the house of Israel and with the house of Judah, not according to the covenant that I made with their fathers, in the day that I took them of the hand to bring them out of the land of Egypt, which my covenant they broke, although I was the husband unto them, saith Yahweh. But this shall be the covenant that I will make with the house of Israel. After those days, saith Yahweh, I will put my law in their inward parts and write it in their hearts, and I will be their God, and they shall be my people." Now, you know, at the time that Jesus Christ came, conditions were pretty bad, and yet the people of the land thought they were being quite virtuous. They thought they were living up to the terms of the Old Covenant. Now, God always meant that what you were required to do under the law, you should do not just in the narrow letter of it, but you should do in the full spirit of it. But by the time they came back from the Babylonian captivity, the people had been thoroughly corrupted by living that 70 years among those pagans. They brought back with them the Babylonian Talmud, and that and not any part of the Bible became their religion. The late Rabbi Stephen S. Wise, chief rabbi of the United States, he's been dead, though, some 5 or 6 years now, he expressed it in language so beautifully clear and accurate, I've never been able to improve upon it. He said, the return from Babylon and the introduction of the Talmud marked the end of Hebrewism and the beginning of Judaism. So don't let anybody tell you that the religion of Judaism goes back to Moses. It doesn't. Now, it pays some lip service to the law as given under Moses and recorded within your first 5 books of the Bible. And the beginning of this thing, actually, was legitimate enough. With any law, you have problems of application of the law. We have a traffic law which says you shall drive your automobile on the right-hand side of the road, not cross the center line, unless conditions of the roadway make it necessary. In other words, if there's a ditch blocking off that entire right side, obviously you are allowed, with proper use of good judgment not to run into somebody head on, you are allowed to cross over to the left side to get around that ditch. So you may find a question then coming up. How much blocking of the right side of the road is required to entitle you to go on the left side to get around the obstacle? Is it dusty and you don't want to get your newly washed car dusty? No, obviously that isn't enough. Has a truck spilled some oil on the road and you're asked to skid off the road if you go there? Well, probably that's enough to entitle you to go around it. So you can see how these problems of application of the law come up. And the Talmud started, legitimately enough, on that basis. Because even with the laws of God, they are reasonable and not arbitrary in their application. And you keep getting questions coming up, now how does this situation apply to it? But the trouble was that eventually, this making of decisions as to what were the limits of application of the law got into the hands of the wrong men. Now, you find a number of things in the Talmud that illustrate that. The Talmud isn't all bad. Nobody could write anything that big and make it 100% bad if he was trying to. There are places where it's harmless enough. But the trouble is, there are places where it is bad, and when you offer wicked men the suggestion, go ahead and do evil because this is authorizing it, you're bound to get bad results. Now, as one of the examples of what the Talmud developed into, the Bible forbids the sin of sodomy in these words. Thou shalt not lie with a man as thou dost with a woman. It is an abomination. Now you think that would be plain enough. But you will find in the Talmud where one of their great rabbis in the early days said, wait a moment. It says with a man. Now if you use a boy who has not yet attained manhood, why that's perfectly all right, because the law only refers to a man, and he isn't a man. And it was these evasions of the spirit of the law, while claiming to stay within the letter of the law, that had made conditions so corrupt at the time of Christ. Now, in his time, the name Talmud had not yet been given to it. It was called the tradition of the elders. Now you remember, throughout his entire ministry, Jesus Christ was conducting one steady running battle with these people who adhered to the Talmud, the tradition of the elders. He said, by your tradition, you have made the laws of God of no effect. Now the new covenant that was promised there in Jeremiah, God said, I'll write my laws in their hearts. Not in the book for them to see how they can evade the meaning and stay within the exact language. I will write it in their hearts so they will understand the law and try to obey it. So, God's covenants were absolute and unconditional, that for us as a people, he was going to do certain things. And you notice he kept his word. We could get the benefits the easy way by obeying him, or we could travel a pretty rough road getting there if we disobeyed. And individual people who violate his rules badly enough can cut themselves off from any benefit of this. It's been true under the Old Testament, and it's true under the New Testament. You can get total condemnation as an individual. But because any individual is a dropout, that doesn't change what God has said he is going to do for his nation, or at least the part of it that makes good. So when we mention these covenants, don't let anybody going to an ordinary church shake your faith by saying, oh, well, there are some sinful people among us, and therefore God has abandoned us and has given all this to somebody else. The Black Panthers will inherit all this, you know. No. God's promises are absolute and unconditional, and he makes good absolutely and unconditionally.
You have been listening to a message by the late Pastor Bertrand L. Compre from his sermon titled The Covenants of God. If you would like a complete CD of this talk, ask for it by name and send a donation to cover our costs and help with radio time. Thank you.
We pray that your spiritual ears have received today's message and that you are fed with strong meat relevant to solving the needs of our nation and Christian civilization everywhere. Herald of Truth is sponsored by Kingdom Identity Ministries through the financial support and prayers of listeners like you who love the truth of God's Word and want to see it broadcast throughout the land to awaken His people. If you would like a
CD
of today's message, tell us the date and station to which you are listening and send a donation to cover our cost plus help with radio time to Kingdom Identity Ministries, Post Office Box 1021, Harrison, Arkansas, 72602. We would appreciate donations made by our international listeners to be in U.S. funds. For a free introductory packet of information, including our doctrinal statement of beliefs, plus lists of books and tapes to aid you in your study of biblical truth, write Kingdom Identity Ministries, Post Office Box 1021, Harrison, Arkansas, 72602, USA. Or request this material by calling 870-741-1119. That's 870-741-1119. Visit our internet website by going to www.kingidentity.com. Type www.kingidentity.com. We invite you to listen regularly to Herald of Truth broadcast for more dynamic messages proclaiming the gospel of the kingdom at this same time and station.